step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 684. I am, as I usually am, Lisa Sheps. I am joined by guest co-host extraordinaire, Mr. Matrix Kilgore.
Hello, friends.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming live as we do on Wednesdays and Sundays at KOOP.org. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Shoulders back, every head held high, for at last we're underway.
It is Wednesday, August 31st, 2022. On the show today, we have the Vortex and their show, Edit Annie. And later on, we'll be talking to Texas Comedies and their show, Murder and Moon Towers. And of course, Matrix and I are going to have a lovely conversation about the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, London, Detroit, and Chicago, which I think I said twice.
Who stands ready to satisfy an expanding clientele? Servants of a prince and a king so far.
Rothschild and Sons.
That's my favorite part when you sing.
Yeah. It's nobody else's favorite part. People are trying to go, what's going on with my radio? Something's wrong. And they're pounding on it and trying to figure out what's going on. But it's just me singing. Matrix Kilgore, welcome back to Offstage and On the Air.
Oh, it feels good to be back.
So good to have you here.
Yes.
Yeah, so Nicole, still up in New York, dealing with family out at the Jersey Shore. Hello, Nicole. Hello, hello.
Hello, Nicole.
We get you.
Yeah.
And that's groovy. And and it was great to have Nicole back last week. And who knows, we might have her again next week.
Yeah, one day I want to be on with Nicole.
Oh, that would be great. We should do that. That's easy to do. So when we, after we talk to our first guest and when we get into local, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to hear a little bit about the Texas Commission on the Arts, if that's not too much trouble.
I sure can.
Awesome. Well, great. So that song was Rothschild and Sons. That was the name of the song, and it's from the Roth. Oh, you know what? I should introduce the people that are here in our studio audience. I'm not doing a very good job. We have Mary Glenn Frederick. Hi, Mary Glenn.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. And Alethea Velez.
Hi.
Did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Before we came on the air, I tested it and it was right. And I can usually only do it right once. So
twice.
A record at this point. So that was Rothschild's from Rothschild's and Sons from the musical The Rothschilds. Did you recognize the voice of the lead singer?
Not at all. Never heard of it.
Hal Linden. You've never heard of Rothschilds? Hal Linden, the Rothschilds tells the story of the Rothschilds and how they went from the ghettos in Eastern Europe somewhere, I forgot exactly where, to being the Rothschilds.
Heard of them.
Yeah. But anyway, I played that for sort of a sad reason. Bob LaPone passed away. And Bob LaPone is best known for a lot of things, but he was nominated for a Tony for playing Zach in Chorus Line.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was going to play... Zach is not in the cast album, like nowhere, because he's a speaking role.
Not singing.
I was hoping he'd be somewhere and I could play that. But he was also in the chorus of Rothschilds back in the day. And the Rothschilds, I think, was in the early 70s. I believe it was early 70s.
I love it when you get that deep cut research.
Yeah, that's what... Yeah, we're hard-hitting journalism here on Offstage and On the Air. But he died of pancreatic cancer, and he's probably best known for founding MCC in New York, and I guess lesser known because he is the brother of somebody named Patti LaPone.
Yeah, what would it be like to have two children with Tony nominations? I don't know.
Yeah, a lot. He also, his very first job was in the ensemble of The Pajama Game, starring Liza Minnelli. And I did not know that Liza Minnelli did The Pajama Game.
Nor I.
Oh,
I would like to see that production. He was also in Noel Coward's Sweet Potato, which I'm going to read just because
Sweet
what a great
potato.
Title. And it's
a
Noel Coward.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Yeah. So here's an interesting thing. So MCC, I think, post-dated, I think it came into being after I left New York or like right around the time I was leaving New York. It was happening. I've never known what it stood for.
That was on the tip of my tongue.
Do you know
I
what
learned.
It is?
Yes.
What is
the
it?
Manhattan Class Company.
Yes. And it was from a group of people who were in class together. Bernie Telsey and him started it. And then they added Will Cantor to be part of the original three.
Wow.
MCC. And they've gone on to do many things that have come onto Broadway. And of course, they're all eluding me. Hand to God, Schoolgirls, or the African Mean Girls play, Wit, which won the Pulitzer, Frozen. But they can't all be perfect.
Let it go.
I got to see Schoolgirls. It was good.
I would love, love to
see
that.
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we should tell folks that Mary Glenn lives in New York. So you probably know more than any of us.
I don't. I will say though that I didn't know what MCC stood for, and it gets tricky when I'm trying to remember MCC or MTC.
Well, exactly. So Manhattan Theater Club was been around forever, and I actually worked there back in the day when it was a tiny little itsy thing.
Cool.
It was like nothing. But yeah, I do the same thing every time I hear MCC. I think Manhattan Theater Club.
There's just a little brain restart of like which
one. Here,
yeah, uh-huh.
Here's something you might find interesting. There's a show there now. I forgot what it is, but it's where the where UCB used to be on 9th Avenue or 8th Avenue over by 23rd Street.
Yeah,
over the it used to be a Gristiti's.
Oh, uh-huh.
That used to be under there was Roundabout Theater Company's second stage. And I worked there a lot, so
is
I spent a lot of time there.
Is that why it's called
there.
Roundabout Underground?
Oh, that would be it.
Wow!
So they had a big stage on 23rd and it's 8th Avenue, 23rd and 8th, and then this was like 26th, I think, or 26th. It was like a few blocks up, and then underneath Gristiti's.
Oh my gosh!
I think it was Gristiti's. It might have been a Sloan's.
Oh yeah. Uh huh.
Yeah. So we're. These are New York.
I know.
These are New
like,
York terms.
We know they're from New York. The geography knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. And I only do it to like show off. That's it.
You still have it.
Yeah.
Accomplished.
I should say that. I want to talk about this real quick. New York, New York is coming to be. They're making a musical out of New York, New York. The movie. Has anybody seen it?
Reading about that. No.
Okay. The soundtrack is lovely. Liza Minnelli and Robert De Niro are in it. The song New York, New York came from that movie. It's written by Kander and Ebb. They have four songs in the movie. And basically, it's a very depressing and violent movie. But this version is based on the movie, but like the Liza Minnelli and the Robert De Niro character aren't there. They don't even show up. I'm pretty sure
it's
wanted to do
spin-off.
A property to use the name and the Kander and Ebb tunes. And they're now doing I keep forgetting which one died. I think Ebb died. Kander's still alive. I can have that wrong. Nicole would be here rolling her eyes because Kander and Ebb are her favorite. It's Kander that's still alive. And he's going to be writing new tunes. And guess who's writing the lyrics? Do you know?
Lynn,
did you read this?
I didn't.
It's got to be Lynn, right?
It is.
I was like, Lynn, he writes everything
he
nowadays.
Writes everything.
That's what the man article I was reading was saying. I guess he's attached in another way. I don't know.
The man who?
I should have read instead of skimmed. Lin-Manuel?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So it's interesting. It's going to open, where is it? There was a date in here somewhere. And it's going to open sometime.
Wow.
Yeah. Seriously, Susan Stroman is going to direct and choreograph.
No, I do love that.
Great. Yep. This Wheatman. Never mind. I've worked with her and yeah, never mind. I had a nickname, which was not derogatory. It was just nobody's going to care. We called her Stro Woman. It means nothing.
No, but it's a great texture.
I know. It's going to have a cast of 31.
Oh, my.
And 19 people in the pit.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
Yes.
Has it, is it having like an out of town?
No, I think it may be coming straight to New York.
Wow. They're doing away with the out of towns.
It's going to be in a Broadway theater to be announced. And we think we know it. Oh, there it is. There is a date, and I circled it. March of 2023.
Oh,
which is right around the corner.
Yeah.
Right around the corner.
Gosh.
All right. We're running out of time. And I want to talk about one thing specifically, especially because I have you here, Major, because we've talked about this a lot. And I was a little nervous about this. New York Times, Jesse Green, who I have a kind of like-hate relationship with, wrote an article, and the title of it is, "After a Long Starring Run, Will Racism at Last Get the Hook?" And I thought, oh, now I understand what it's saying. I read, boy. See, this is a whole version of self. There's a word, can't find it. I thought it was saying, in essence, we had this racial reckoning, and we all did this work. Is that going away? But he's actually saying, "Will." When I read the article, that's not what it said. It's basically saying, "Will racism in theater get the hook?" And whereas we know it won't get the hook right away, and, you know, hopefully years and years down the road it will. But it was a very interesting article. Did you get a chance to read it, Matrix?
I didn't.
Okay. So,
but I, from what I'm hearing, I think there's some reflection that could go on at the New York Times.
Oh, definitely. It's interesting that this article came from Jesse Green.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I found kind of interesting. There can be a lot of reflection. I mean, not to mention the easiest thing when... oh God! When what's his name left, and they when who wrote for the Times?
Theater critic.
Yeah, the theater critic. That's not the other person. That's just, I hate getting old. Anyway, when he left, the secondary critic, when he left, they had the chance to hire someone who was not a white man, mm-hmm. and yet they hired a white man, and that was. I think
disappointing.
I think so. But so at times I've liked Jesse Green and at times I haven't liked him. So I find it interesting that this article comes from him. But if you read the article, they're talking about that, you know, we had COVID, which affected Broadway. Then there was the killing of George Floyd and the We See You White Theater list of demands that really changed the way a lot of theaters were thinking and are thinking. Mm-hmm. And I use, if you take Austin as a microcosm, you know, the theater companies have been doing a lot of talking about this. And then some theater companies keep the work going and some of them have sort of faded out now that it's not top of mind. But the bottom line is, I think it's getting better. And they're talking about a lot of the theater companies around the country that now have, they've gotten rid of their longstanding white male heads of these companies, and they've replaced them with artistic directors of color. And more interestingly, I think, is that they are, and one of the things that I want to talk about, is they're really rethinking even the structure of theater, which, what is theater? What are you doing? You know, they would do 4 shows a season, and now some mm-hmm. of them have like scrapped that and are just doing different things.
Yeah,
and it's more. I'm gonna come up with a word. It's more diverse. That's not the word.
Responsive
I was trying to
the communities.
Yeah.
That
and it mirrors the communities that these theaters are housed in. But interestingly enough, it also saves them money. They, you know, it's expensive to produce shows.
And also could get them more money when you do shows that speak to more people and expand the audiences of your theater.
True.
I love the transition of leadership that we see in New York and across the country of longstanding leaders and the boards taking this opportunity to diversify leadership and how you make theater.
Mm-hmm.
At the top, because I think it does affect
the whole. It
has
to start at the top, and that's so important. And interestingly, on Broadway, there's a higher percentage of non-Caucasian ticket buyers, which is good things. But they also talk about culturally specific theater companies. That it's not the death knell, but it's also, it's a lot of them feel that there is very interesting. They feel like they're a farm team now because all the bigger theater companies want diversity. They want directors of color. They want casts of color. They want, and they find these people in these culturally specific theater companies that have been around for a long time. And I guess in a weird world, if culturally specific companies die, that could be a good thing. It means they're not needed anymore, that we've achieved that goal of equity. What do y'all think of that?
It gives me pause. I think there's a way of culturally working that we would have to vastly redesign and relook at how traditional theater companies from a Western European model build and make theater. Mm-hmm. Because I think, the model of 3 weeks and it just being about business, I think you don't necessarily see that in some culturally specific
right.
companies.
I think that's much of the crux of what this article is saying.
One thing I've seen that it feels cool is a lot of co-productions.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that, it's that idea of like, you don't just go into a community and say, here's the new way of doing things, but rather it's like providing resources to people who are already doing their thing. And that feels like it's, in many realms, not just theater, but it's like, how can we uplift smaller, maybe more cultural specific theater companies and provide them with resources and perhaps a bigger platform. And so that they can like keep doing their thing, because also like, I'm sure it's like great for people to exist within those, ecospheres.
But it has to be done right. I mean, so many, there are lots of instances of bigger companies co-producing with a smaller company and basically not allowing them to co-produce and them taking the credit for it. So we've just got to be careful about when we do that. And then we have a co-production. It is truly a co-production.
Mm-hmm. And a true partnership instead of just harvesting talent. Because we know that the funding isn't equal.
Right.
The grants aren't equal. So I think the co-productions are a way to share resources and funnel it into raising and investing culturally specific art.
Correct. Agreed. Yeah. So here's the deal. We've combined, of my list of like 100 things to talk about, we've run out of time. So folks, you can go to offstageonair.com and get links to the things that we were going to talk about. and there's some very interesting things, including a new theater cookbook that's coming out that's co-written by some food person. And let's see if I can remember, because I don't have the article in front of me right now. And then somebody else, famous theater person, can't remember who it is. But the one thing I want to talk about before we go on and take a break and listen to our guests who have been part of this conversation is Matilda, the movie musical they shot, is coming to Netflix. First of all, it's coming to theaters. And then it's coming to Netflix on December 25th, I think, like the day before.
Love it, period. Haven't seen anything about it. I love it. I'm buying it. It's great.
Yeah. Well, so you'll be able to see it in theaters around the country before then. I'm not looking at the article. It's in there at offstageonair.com. But if you wait, if you're patient, if you wait till Christmas, or as I like to call it, Christian Hanukkah.
Amazing.
I just made that up. Feel free to use it, folks. You can see it on the flicks of net. But in the meantime, let's hear, oh my God, I forgot her first name. Nicole's favorite Matilda. First name, insert first name here, Shapiro. Millie. Shapiro singing from the original Broadway. I'm just a mess. Here it is. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with me, Lisa Sheps, and
Matrix Kilgore.
And
Alethea Velez.
And
Mary Glenn Frederick.
Awesome. And we are now going to switch gears and talk specifically about Edit Annie that's playing at the Vortex. And Mary Glenn Frederick, I'm going to just introduce you again. You are the playwright, correct?
That is correct.
Yay, I got that right.
Yeah.
And Alethea Velez is playing Annie.
Correct.
Is it Annie, look what you've done for us, Annie. Is that the one?
Almost.
You can say no. Yeah, I have to tell you, I don't see the Vortex producing the musical Annie in anything. Hey, tell us about the show. What is it?
So Edit Annie is a play that I wrote. It's about a video editor named Annie who has been editing remotely for a viral social media influencer, Clara, for years, and they've never met in person.
Hashtag Clara or something.
Hashtag.
Yes.
Well, her social media name is Clara Couture.
There it is.
Annie is, she would argue that she's not agoraphobic. So I'd say arguably agoraphobic.
Okay.
And she leaves the house and meets Clara in person accidentally. And so the play sort of follows their meeting after, you know, 2 years of this one-sided intimacy, and their relationship takes kind of an interesting turn.
Yeah, it's an interesting conceit. And when you read the description on the Vortex website, which you can find at vortexrep.org, it really fascinates me because what you think it's about mm-hmm. really kind of shifts in the middle, and mm-hmm. it really talks about this day and age of social media and how we can shape our own lives, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was super... I've been a video editor for going on 12 years.
Well, who hasn't?
and I was super fascinated with a lot of things, like specifically with video editing, how powerful that tool is and how much you can create something that isn't necessarily in the raw footage.
Uh-huh.
And how we kind of do the same thing on social media. We all create this avatar of ourselves that exists online, and like, is it us? Is it not us? And just the way that we can manipulate reality so much, like as we're living out our lives in digital mm-hmm. spaces.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you play Annie.
I play Annie.
And you know what? My mind just keeps going to Annie the Musical. I'm just, in my mind, I see Little Orphan Annie, and I know that's not the case. Tell
Listeners
us about the character and your approach to it.
Annie is very, I don't know, it's a very funny play, which is something I love, and I relate to finding like comedy as a defense mechanism.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
No. So, I mean, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, she's just like silly, goofy, desperately wants to be loved. Very relatable, I think, to most
yeah.
people. And lonely, which I don't know. I think it's a really interesting play post-COVID, because mm-hmm. And I don't know if you wrote it pre or post-COVID, actually.
Pre, actually.
I thought
which is
so,
interesting,
but it feels like more poignant post, because
yeah.
I think we all now know what it's like to be lonely and like sitting behind screens and
mm-hmm.
yeah, so many of us that weren't behind screens all mm-hmm. that often were forced into that and mm-hmm. became part of the virtual world kind of accidentally. I know that, you know, I did. I'd like my social media was Zoom, unfortunately.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But that's fascinating. And I know that I was talking to Bonnie Cullum, the producing artistic director over mm-hmm. at the Vortex, and she was just so challenged by it. And the scenic elements and the technical mm-hmm. elements around it sound really
yes.
fascinating.
There's a lot of video elements. A
lot of video elements.
I'm excited.
Yeah,
Mary Glenn, you actually did, correct?
Yes, I. In addition to writing the play for this production, I'm doing video design, and my brain feels a little bit broken. It's actually quite meta that I wrote this play, and
now you're having to edit
so much.
I'm editing 100% of my conscious hours at this point. But it's all, we're in tech right now, and it's really thrilling to see it coming together. There's multiple video screens with different, you know, content playing on each screen. And videos are sort of transition moments in the play. And also we're watching Annie live edit at different points. We're seeing like manipulation on screens and
And live. In person.
So it's a lot. And I'm so grateful to the Vortex and to Bonnie for taking a chance, because everyone who reads this play is like, looks great, unproducible.
difficult to produce, clearly. Bonnie has been telling me how difficult it is for her, but probably worth it, I'm guessing. How big is the cast? I'm assuming is it a single?
It's three.
It's a three-hander, we like to call that in the biz.
And then there's Clara Couture's boyfriend appears only on
video.
Four. he will be in the program, and I realize that I think the audience will spend the whole play waiting for him to come on stage.
Well, you know what? Just give him a lower third. That'll take care of that.
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. So, I feel, I don't know anything about it, but I'm feeling like dark comedy. What genre would you throw this into?
Yeah, dark comedy is great. It's a little twisty in that way.
Yeah, it's like starts out like a dark comedy in it, and it kind of spirals into thrillery, like psychological thriller.
Yeah, and like takes in the middle, sort of has a left turn into rom-com. Part of my, like, while I was writing it, part of what I was excited about sort of was mirroring the form of the play with the thematics of the play, and the ability to sort of be creating your reality, and that, like, sometimes we're living in a dark comedy, and sometimes we're living in a tragedy, and sometimes we're living in a rom-com. It's definitely genre bending in that way.
That's amazing. Now, this piece is part of the National New Play Network. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm super grateful that my amazing friend and director, Will Detlefson, we're here sort of because he had a directing fellowship through National New Play Network and the O'Neill Center, and they basically connected Will to the Vortex and to Bonnie, who took a big old chance on this play.
That's exactly how we say it in Texas. Big old chance.
Big old chance.
That's great. So both Will, you are not local, as we've discussed. You live in New York. Is Will also from out of town?
Yes, he also lives in New York. So we are collaborators and roommates.
Oh my gosh!
Wow.
But this is our 10th production working together. So it's pretty easy.
Roommates, as we discovered before we went on the air, you're in Washington Heights. We were like two blocks away from each other.
Yes.
If I still lived there, but
I'll take pictures of your, I'll text you some pictures of your place.
I've actually got one right in my phone. I'll show you. It looks exactly as it did before, as I mentioned.
So how's the experience of being playwright and video editing, like, a key essential element of this play? Like, how has that dance been for you?
It has been so challenging, which when I said I would do the video design, I knew it would be. But I think also, you know, future productions, I think we'll have it a lot easier. There's a way that I kind of had to do video design for this version because it's all in my head. And yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I'm going to have like between 100 and 150 separate videos that I have like shot or digitally composited and then edited going into the play. And, you know, some of those are like micro cues when Annie is moving the mouse and things. So it has been very challenging, but I think also for someone who has maybe just a couple control issues, it's also been great to be able to be like, well, I'm the only person doing it. So yes, like we can do it. And I can tell Will exactly, you know, what I need to film and what this video is supposed to be. And he's like, great.
It makes a lot of sense to have you do that, because in essence, you know, those videos, I would assume, are part of the writing, the sub infrastructure.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So that makes a lot of sense. And there's a lot of screens, correct?
Yes. There's one massive screen in the middle.
Say massive and the Vortex in the same sentence.
Yeah, it takes up a lot of that stage.
It's massive in relation.
Yes, comparatively massive. The stage direction that I wrote is that a mosaic of screens frames the stage. So we have the one big screen behind Annie, which is primarily like there are no, she's not, you know, editing on, there are no computer monitors in front of her.
Right.
So everything she's doing, the audience is seeing behind her. And then there are.
That would make sense because the audience would have to step up and stand over the shoulder.
Right. Just sort of peer around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a bunch of screens sort of all around that that are sometimes playing all different videos, sometimes the same video. Yeah.
Well, wonderful. We're smack out of time.
Oh, thank you.
Us when this show opens and how long it plays.
It opens September 9th.
That's correct. You got it.
And it plays through the 24th.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I have all that. If you got stuck, I could do it. And where can folks go to get more information about the show?
They can go, if you'd like to find out any more information, you can go to vortexrep.org, O-R-G, for any information.
Yeah. Oddly enough, my my listeners know how to spell org.
Amazing. Oh, yeah, I thought I heard you say O-R-G earlier, and then I was like, okay, this is the radio way.
Oh, no.
Way to say it right.
Just the Lisa way of saying things.
There are no rules on offstage and on the air.
I love it.
Well, thank you all so much for coming on the show.
Thank
I look
you for
forward to seeing
us.
It.
Thank you.
And best of luck with tech. Tech's got to be crazy.
Yes.
It's We're a wild one. Yeah.
It's a wild one.
I'll sleep in a couple weeks.
There you go. Well, that was Mary Glenn Frederick and Alethea Velez of the Vortex production of Edit Annie, playing the 9th through the 24th. For more information, vortexrep.org. I said it the way radio people do it. And, you know, choosing a song for this one was kind of difficult. I wanted to get the essence of the whole world of social media and creating your own existence, and so I had to go to Dear Evan Hansen, and
nice.
I had no choice, so here it is. We'll be right back.
I gotta tell you, life without you has been
and we're back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Matrix.
Hey,
we're joined in the studio by our next guests, even though we're not going to be talking about their thing right now, but I do want to introduce a longtime friend of the show, John Cecil.
Hello there.
And Kelsey Kimball.
Hey.
Got to get right up on that microphone, both of you. So let's talk local. It's interesting. We were so busy in the past few weeks, and there's much less running right now. And there's not a lot to specifically talk about that isn't coming on the show soon. My computer just did crazy things. I did want to point out the Archive Theater is doing Macbeth out at Pioneer Farms.
I love that poster, too. And they're my neighbors, Pioneer
this one?
Farms. Nice. Yes.
I've never been out there. You know, we've talked about it a lot, especially in our discussions with the Austin Theater folks. But the titular role of the Scottish dude is going to be played by Jason Graff, and Lady Macbeth is Kathleen Fletcher. So it should be really fun, and it's out at Pioneer Farms. Which is supposed to be great. Have you been out
it's
there?
It's great, yeah. It's right around the corner from my house.
I thought they were further north than that.
Yeah, they're a little bit north, but I can get there like 5 minutes. Okay. It's like a bunch of like ancient homes that they've moved to this one place, and it's supposed to be haunted, some of the houses, so they have like ghost tours out there.
Oh, nice.
And reenactment things. It's
I
great.
Keep thinking it's like Colonial Williamsburg. That's what I think about.
Ish, but not as theatrical.
50 years later, probably. 50,
maybe. But it looks interesting. It is September 8th through 25th at 8 p.m. You can get information. I don't know. Google the Archive Theater. It'll show up. That's what I did. There are some pictures of the witches. Boy,
ooh.
Oh, boy, oh, toil in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Nice costumes.
Yeah. Well, let's see who did the costumes, because I happen to have, wait, maybe not. It didn't. Wait, hold on. Nobody panic. I do have the costumes are done by the costume designers, Jennifer Rose Davis, who works out there actually.
Yep.
And where'd it go? I lost it already. Star Maddox. I don't know Star Maddox, but I want
Not
that
yet.
Name.
You
Changing
can have
my
it.
Name.
You can have it.
Thank you, John.
Sure.
Just call me Star. That looks like a lot of fun. Other things happening that are currently playing are the Fantastics over at City Theater.
My favorite.
I'm gonna go to that.
I'm gonna probably go as well.
No, really.
Since how I've done it so many times.
I love that.
And
show.
Once in Spanish, my listeners are sick of hearing about it. I talk about it all the time.
But
Los Fantásticos, in case you're wondering.
Impressive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the Virgin Trial that we talked about last year at Alchemy at the Maestro George. And over at one of the smaller theater houses here in town called Zach is The Inheritance Part 1. And I've heard so many good things about this production. But I can't get beyond the 3-hour runtime of part one.
Is that too short?
Yeah, like I want it to be longer. Six.
Yeah.
I'd like to do part one and part two at the same time.
I mean, you're paying the ticket price, right?
Give me a good 6-hour depressing play. That's what I want.
Yeah.
But people say it's good. So anybody see it? No.
Not
Kelsey,
yet.
Let me give you a little hint. Shrugging
does
not work on the radio.
Parenthetical shrug.
Just so you know, in case you were wondering, if I can pull this up on the computer. Boy, I miss the days of paper. It was a lot easier. I'm going to go into Today in Theater History, and I must say that I used to pull Today in Theater History directly from Playbill.com. They had a Today in History thing, and they would have like 20 articles, and they've stopped doing it, and I'm Trey mad at them.
Computers took over.
I will let Sydney know. I will register your complaint.
Please do. And all I have is a bunch of birthdays for today. Elizabeth Ashley, who I saw on Broadway in... She was in Agnes of God.
Oh.
Which I did not like. But don't tell her. She listens to the show. Maren Ireland. Don't know who she is.
You are stumping me today.
Jeff Bowen. Oh, you don't know Elizabeth Ashley? Elizabeth Ashley. She's pretty famous. Anybody else not know Elizabeth Ashley?
Oh,
I've heard the name.
Oop, yes. There you go. That's David Paymer, who I wouldn't know by name, but I know by face. This guy.
Oh yeah.
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 He's a co-star on like lots of things on television, and Shirley Booth. Who knows who Shirley Booth was? Who is she best known for?
Shirley Booth. There's your hint.
Oh, gosh.
She was Hazel in the 50s series. Hazel. She was the titular character.
Don't get teed off.
Yeah.
She'd always say, don't get teed off.
Yeah, I don't remember what she said.
You didn't watch it?
I did.
I watched it.
Yeah. I did watch it.
Not in the 50s.
Me neither. It was reruns for me. We did not have Nick at Night back then.
No.
We just watched things in reruns. So that's the skinny with that.
You taught me all kinds of things today.
There you go. And when you hear this, we're going to play a little song that Shirley Booth is singing on from A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, which I had no idea they made a musical about until today.
Wow.
So, and Shirley Booth was in it, and it was back in the day. And this is a song called He Had Refinement.
He'd say, pawn my glove politely when he shook my
head. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Matrix. We've been talking with John Cecil and Kelsey Kimball earlier, easy for you to say. We had a lovely conversation with Mary Glenn Frederick and Alethea Velez of the Vortex Theater's Edit Annie. Now we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk about Texas comedies, because who doesn't like a Texas comedy?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. And I'm going to reintroduce you, John Cecil, who is the brains behind Texas comedies.
Yeah, one of the many organs behind this show.
Yep, right there. And Kelsey Kimball, who's performed in many.
Yes.
And in pure transparency, Kelsey was my musical director on Unexpected Joy last December at Ground Floor Theater. And we haven't seen each other since then.
I know, it's good to
but
see you.
But I will say, and I know that the radio listeners will find this fascinating, that I think of you every day as because your apartment is on my route home.
Yes.
There you go. So this is a show called Moira and Moon Towers.
Moiras and Moon Towers, that's right, yeah.
Tell us about it.
Well, it's based on true events in Austin. That's where we are right now. In the 1880s, there was a rash of murders, a rampage, a spree, a serial killer, and they may never have found out who it was. And you may never find out, but you might find out from the show. At the same time, well, a little bit later, they installed the famous iconic moon towers,
correct,
or they were called moonlight towers, to fight crime. And despite the deep shadows cast by the moon towers, they thought that would stop crime in Austin.
Well, they did. They did moon towers all over the country. Austin is the only one that still has them.
I know. Yeah.
So that's awesome. This is part of, and I forgot the name of it. It's a famous case.
Mm-hmm.
What
it's
is it?
The Servant Girl Annihilator.
Servant Girl Annihilator case, oh, wow. Which, by the way, Weird City Theater Productions did a show about Servant Girl Annihilator like 17 years ago.
What?
Yes, it's true.
Okay.
They were on this very it had to be less than 15 years ago because they were on this show.
Well, I have a question for your studio audience.
Oh, good.
And
they would love to
maybe
answer.
You can answer this. So, because I got a call that somebody said, I just decided to call to tell you that this true crime stuff, it's really horrible that you're doing a comedy, a musical comedy about a real murder. And I said, of course, I said, well, how did you hear about us and would you like tickets? But she had a So my question is to your studio, and I see the lights are already lighting up on the board.
Lighting up. Yes.
Is there other shows that are musical comedies about true crime? Think about it. It's not easy because a lot of people say...
Well, it's, there are musicals that I can think of right offhand, but I would not put the word comedy in the same.
Right, but a musical about a real crime.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are musicals. Parade.
Okay.
For one.
Definitely not
Assassins for two.
Okay. Here we go. Here we go.
Bugsy for three.
All right.
And that is a musical comedy, although comedy. I don't know. but yeah, and we will put that out... we're not taking calls because we have this crazy delay, so that doesn't make it work. But you can certainly email Lisa at offstageonair.com if you want to, like, and we'll talk about it next week when we'll talk about murders in moon towers as well. I do love the tidbit about the moon towers being a crime deterrent, or the thinking that they're a crime deterrent, which of course we know is silly.
Well, it didn't work.
No.
Not completely.
No.
So, but it was a big idea. But the thing was, the original moon towers had very, very, very bright lights. They were much brighter. They were carbon something. And
well, somebody had to go up there and light them every night, I think, didn't they?
Well, they were electrical because they were powered by the new
dam. Originally?
They were powered by the new dam.
Okay.
That later got washed away. But you could read your watch, as I'm demonstrating here, by the light of the moon tower during the night.
Well, he says this, and my listeners don't know this, but there is a moon tower here in the studio, and we are this studio is lit only by moon tower. So I can verify that I was able to read John's watch.
Absolutely. So that's what the moon towers were for, and that's why we made the connection between the two. And, of course, there's two M's. And then with a musical, there's three M's. And with murder mystery, there's five M's.
And with an ampersand, there's a six sentence.
Murders, Moon Towers, a musical murder mystery.
So this is a narrative, and you insinuated that we may find out who the murderer is through your show?
You have to come to the show.
Yeah.
And then you might find out. That's okay. Right. And if you listen to the song that we may be able to do later in the studio.
Oh, we're doing it.
There may be something called foreshadowing. Okay.
You know, ooh. I learned so much literary lore from you when you're here. I heard of foreshadowing. Kelsey, what character do you play?
So I play Dear Miss Eula Phillips. She's just a little lovable sweetheart. I think the audience will...
Typecasting.
They're just going to fall right in love with her.
And she's an extortionist.
No, I mean that.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't
tell
that.
We're taking liberties here.
Blackmailatrix.
Well, I mean, we all do what we have to do, I think. That's what makes her character so relatable.
That's true. We do what we got to do.
So, and how many people in the cast?
We've got seven people in the cast and a band of three. And Eula Phillips, her character is based on a real person. And her husband, Jimmy Phillips. And also May Tobin, who ran a cat house down on Brown Fifth Street.
I know her.
You know,
she and I get mistaken a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
May Tobin's coming in late, a little bit in a couple minutes.
She and I, there was a lot of times that people look at me and go, May? And I go, no, it's Lisa. They go, oh, wow. Okay.
Well, you run a notorious cat house.
I do. Well, she does. I'm not her. She's my doppelganger. So that's fascinating. Is Josh Mindertzma in this show?
No, but a little bit
first
later,
time.
I'll show you. Josh is at Burning Man.
Oh, okay.
And I'll show you a photo if you don't believe me.
I
believe you. Well, why don't we, what do you say we like jump into this song?
I say, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Let's do it. And is it, are both of you going to be singing, or is it just one of you singing?
Well,
doesn't matter.
Kelsey's carrying the heavy load on the singing. I will join in at the end for our big finish. And I'm also playing the part of her husband, Jimmy Phillips, well, just for this show, not actually in the show, okay, just for today.
All right. I won't tell
and
anybody.
And we have a very special guest playing May.
Wonderful. Well, everybody, this is John Cecil and Kelsey Kimball doing a song from Texas Comedy's production of Murderers in Moon Towers.
No one lays a finger on me. No, no one lays a finger on me. Oh, I'm unafraid of being made a prey of. No victim I. I'll tell you why. I always get away scot-free. Bad things happen to other people, but not me. Not terrified of Emmy on the side. No one lays a finger on me. Yes, I know I'm a lucky so-and-so. Do stop, don't get caught. I stir the pot, making trouble a lot. Comeuppance? I think not.
Eula. No.
Jimmy, I'm kind of busy.
Things are getting complicated. These schemes are yours.
Yeah.
We're talking jail time here.
Maybe. Maybe for you, but... No, not I. It'll be the other guy in adverse circumstances. Won't touch me. I'd like to see them try. I'll take my chances.
Eula, now you leave my George alone.
Your George? He doesn't even look like you.
Just be careful. It's dangerous out there, you know.
I know.
Especially for someone like you.
Ha! I'm not worried. Cause I'm slippery. I'm slippery. No one lays a finger on me. I act with impunity. A pushy mom don't have a qualm. My husband, he don't bother me.
Crazy mayor. Axe slayer, angry mob, I got no prob.
No one lays a finger on.
They can just kiss.
No one lays a finger on.
They can't touch this. Not a single finger laid on
no
me.
No one lays a finger on. No one lays a finger on. No one lays a finger on me.
Oh my God, how much fun is that?
Right?
How much fun is that, I have to say. And who was that person that came in there?
Wow.
I know. I do have to. I loved when you said, because I'm slippery. You did a whole Bob Fosse or a modified Bob Fosse back there. So so that sounds like a lot of fun. Is that the kind of feel that people are going to get for the whole show?
Oh, yeah. It's a lively show. Now, every song's different.
Well, that's a good thing. Because if you did the same song every time, that might be a little... Yeah.
That's kind of the angle we're doing. Every song different, but definitely an uplifting, light musical comedy about a true crime.
There you go. And where is this going to be performed?
Well, we're all going to be at the Doherty Arts Center.
Okay.
From September 8th until the 17th. Mm-hmm. So that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Right. And as many of your shows go on the road, is that the same thing going to happen with this one?
Oh, we're going to take this on the road. Yeah. We'll probably be... well, we were just talking to Navasota and just talking to San Angelo.
I told them
to go out there. They're at the San Angelo Performing Arts Center. So we'll probably be out there in May, not till next spring.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Great. That's very exciting. So we always love having you on the show. And
love being here.
Yeah, so you're always welcome here. Did you say when you open and close? Yeah, where do folks go to get more information?
More information at texascomedies.com, and there's a link right there to our page and tickets, just in case you want to buy tickets.
Awesome. Well, you never know what people would want to do. That's their choice. Not
I would buy tickets, but I'm getting in free.
Well, that's you. You get your comps. Well, that was John Cecil and Kelsey Kimball of Texas Comedies, Murders in Moon Towers, playing at the Doherty Arts Center September 8th through 17th. For more information, texascomedies.com. And this is from a show called Glenn Sheen, another famous murderer.
I planned a perfect little murder plot. It's a brilliant little
I had never heard of this show, Glenn Sheen, which played somewhere in the Midwest.
And
it's about a murder that happened, I think, in St. Louis or St. something.
Oh, wow. I was about to say, your knowledge, you're teaching me today.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So I want to take this last little moment to talk about
what you've been doing. I don't think we've talked about it on the show before. You have moved on. You used to be with Creative Action, and now you're at the Texas Commission on the Arts.
Yeah,
I have a question. I mean, one question. What the heck is the Texas Commission on the Arts?
The Texas Commission on the Arts is the state agency that supports the economic impact and creative sectors in the state of Texas.
Like all creative sectors.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
For nonprofits, yeah.
Yeah, and you are on the program side of this?
Yeah, I am on the program side. I'm a program administrator, and I specifically work with the theater organizations, dance organizations, and across the mediums with arts education.
Yeah, well, that's it's a big job and an important job, and many of the theaters and theater companies here get support from the Texas Commission on the Arts.
I'm very proud about that.
Yeah, and they've been working very hard with Six Square here in Austin to really push the arts for the Six Square District, which focuses on Black artists, right?
Yeah, Six Square is one of the 50 cultural districts in the state. The agency, we are the only agency that gives out the designation to be a cultural district.
Right, and there are two in Austin, right?
I believe so.
Six Square and the Red River.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, see, I know what I'm talking about.
You do. I always forget about that Red River one, but yes.
So, I mean, is it, and I don't know, I'm really asking this, is it unusual to have... like, do you know offhand, like, how many cultural districts does Houston have?
I believe Houston has 8 cultural districts.
Okay. And so how can we get more here in Austin?
Well,
just apply for it?
Yeah, it's a process. You have to get community support. You have to send in a letter of, like, saying that you want to be part of the process and really gain the whole scale of the community support, how walkable the area is, how many hotels. It's a big process.
Well, I also look at, Six Square is relatively new. That district is, I think, less than 5 years old. Am I right about that?
I think they've had a cultural district for some time.
Oh, okay. Because that
but
what
they're
I was
really active right
all
now.
All right. What I was going to say is that because this is housed in East Austin, in the area where Black people were forced to be in 1928 and now are being forced away because of economic issues. And you would think, I would have thought that would have been a district a long time ago, and evidently it has been. Yeah.
I think Pam is just doing a really great job in engaging the arts community mm-hmm. in the district.
And that's Pamela Benson Owens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thanks. Everybody doesn't know what I know.
Yeah, everybody doesn't know your good friend Pam. Well, we're coming up to the end of the show. It was great having you here.
I know. I just got to, like, drop by more often.
You really should. You should just pop in. I'm just going to look and see. We have, like, an extra minute or so. I'm going to see if there's anything I want to... I'm just going to go through it, and I'm not looking at any of the notes, but there's a review of Kinky Boots, which reopened in New York at... not at the Signature, so it's not small. It's a big version. And it got a really great review in the New York Times. There's going to be a musical about Ella Fitzgerald.
And Anna Deavere Smith.
And Anna Deavere Smith is part of that team.
Anything she's on, I'm down for.
Yeah. And for Patty, and you can see this video on the link, Pippin has reopened in Japan. And there is on YouTube is a magic to do in Japanese. And I find it interesting is like they go... There's magic to do Japanese language. So if they used all the first words in English and then whatever happened next was done in Japanese.
I think that's interesting.
I think it's interesting. Yeah.
What in the translation?
Because I'm guessing that magic to do does not directly translate. I don't know. There's also an article about Deaf West and how that company that people will know from Tony-nominated Broadway productions of Spring Awakening and Big River in Los Angeles. They're about 30 years old now, I think, and how they've just become a pretty big deal. And they have a lot of stuff in not only in L.A., but in New York as well.
Yeah.
And they're thinking about opening a second company or a second physical structure in New York.
So it'll be Deaf East?
It would be Deaf East. It'd be Deaf West East. Anyway, Matrix, thank you for coming on and co-hosting.
No problem. Anytime, Lisa.
I really, really appreciate it. We have up here waiting in the wings is John Hoffner, who really wants to get on the microphone. He's trying to with all his might for Austin Common Radio. John, why don't you tell folks what's going to be on your show today?
We are going to talk about the Inflation Reduction Act yet again, and we're going to talk about some of the environmental effects that we and benefits we'll see in Texas. So really still excited about that bill. We're going to see some really cool things happening in Texas.
And that's, good things happening in that direction.
Yes, it's so great that that bill went through. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that.
Yep. John's show, Common Radio, Austin Common Radio Hour, is coming up in just 1 minute. Oh, 1 minute. That's it. So we're going to go back and listen to more of that same song that we were listening to before. I call it A Perfect Little Murder. And we will see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, folks.
Just a wine or a glass of beer. To tell the truth, I wish I wasn't here. Yes, I'm sorry to admit this, but I'm honestly scared shitless. I was drafted out of all